Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Hey, you. Yeah, you in the cafe. Did you know that a big portion of people who listen to Joy at work, just like you? Right now, times are very tough financially, and without your support, Joy may not be around to help you through your workday. So tell your next door neighbour, your friends, and even your dad to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture, Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12, on Joy 94.9.
You are on Saturday Magazine Joy 94.9. Macca here. Tass, who we got next?
Macca, well, I've already pre-announced
you have,
this.
But you see, people might have just joined us.
That is absolutely right. You're Macca and I'm Tass. And in the studio, our very first guest this morning is John Pizzuto, former Victorian Member of Parliament, in fact, held the seat of Hawthorne, and is now a full-time volunteer commentator, I believe. Is that right, John?
Volunteer, yes. Commentator, sometimes. Full-time, no. But I'm doing more and more of it. It's becoming more of what I do, and I tend to find myself more and more in that space. Of course, I'd love to be a participant on the ground, but I'm stuck in the stands. So
John, what do you do to make a living then?
I basically went back on the tools and started a consulting / law firm. So I'm building that while I do media, while I do policy stuff, hoping to do more with the School of Government at the University of Melbourne. There's a few things there. There's a lot to talk about in that space, you know, democracy, government institutions, how we maintain their standing in the community when they're under attack.
So what sort of law do you specialise in your consulting practice?
I was principally a litigator. So I spent a lot of time in the courts and tribunals. But these days, because I'm a little bit older than I was 25 years ago when I first started out, I tend to be more about trying to resolve things. So even when I'm acting for a client and I'm in a sort of, if you like, a partisan role for a party, I'm still looking for ways to resolve things.
So what we've decided to do this morning with you, John, is to just run through a series of topics with you and just have a conversation with you about...
Ruin any chance of returning. Although, now, I must say, I'm just going to jump quick, just briefly as a comment, with the pre-selections coming up in Victorian seats, federal and state, This could be your chance to get in early, John.
Oh, well, I've said publicly, Macca, and Happy New Year, by the way, to all the listeners. It's great to be back. Look, I'm keen on looking at that.
And, Menzies would be good.
No, I won't be. I definitely won't be a candidate in that race, but I'm keen to look at an appropriate opportunity. And I've said that publicly. I want to be open and honest about that and try and get back in if I can. Yeah. Comebacks are not easy, but I'll try.
And I was going to say, I did hear you on Thursday morning on 774 with Virginia Trioli and Bronwyn Pike, who's another regular guest of ours.
Oh, right, okay.
And in fact has been in this studio as a co-host on many occasions and a member of Joy, in fact. Yeah. So
they're two formidable individuals, so I have to confess to some nerves being in the same studio.
Well, I thought it was a great conversation, actually, and the discussion about life beyond politics I thought was very interesting.
Yeah, and I think Bronwyn and I both made the point that it's like a lot of things in life, you wish you knew then what you know now. That's just the lesson.
Well, hindsight is always such a privilege, isn't it?
Hindsight.
So, topics. We thought we might kick off by, you've already mentioned Happy New Year. So the story that's greeted the nation this year has been the bushfires, and in particular, the federal government's response to bushfire management. We're interested in what some of your thoughts and reflections about that might be.
Yeah, look, thanks, Tess. It certainly has been a very unique start to the year, and I think in terms of the, if you like, the optics around how leaders behave in those situations. I'll leave that to one side because I think the longer term issue is more about trying to address the community's concerns around climate change, fuel load management around the state. And, you know, there's a lot to be discussed there. I think for my party, I'm pleased this week that Michael O'Brien came out and said we've got to look at some longer term targets, which was a very significant, I think, positive move.
He's seen your list, Tess.
No, I have seen no list. But I also think federally...
Well, we're about to describe Michael as being a climate change believer now, or a converse.
Look, to be fair to Michael and everyone else, it hasn't been an easy time. I'm not wanting the sympathy of our listeners necessarily, but he's made a significant step this week, I think, is one which I wholeheartedly support, not just because of what I saw in my own electorate, but I think even with young kids, this is an issue that the community wants addressed. And there are gradations of how, you know, urgently people want to deal with this and how significantly they want to move. But it hasn't been easy. So for Michael to do that, I think it was a really significant step for the party. I was very pleased. And I hope that federally they take some of the lead out of that as well.
Well, he had his waste to energy policy,
yeah,
which a version of it or whatever is actually the government is a project underway. Don't know whether that's because of that or everyone's arrived at the same point. I thought it was quite an interesting policy. But it's good to hear that he's saying, you know, we need to have a discussion about this federally. I think he sees there's a bit of a gap.
Yeah. And you know, I don't want to speak for Michael, but I know that the Zero to Landfill was a very significant and well-received policy. So, and it's a positive thing, and I think that's what Michael's taken out of the last 4 years, if just as an observer, is that, you know, that's what the people want. And, you know, I'm hopeful that when stuff comes out around infrastructure, dealing with those sorts of things around the community, schools, roads, public transport and the rest, you'll see that even amplify for Michael and the team.
John, increasingly I'm reading more and more reports from across the globe, actually, not just within Australia, about our attitude to climate change and our government's response. And it's actually not pretty. Do you have any thoughts about those?
Look, I only hope, and I've said this privately and publicly, I just hope that the party picks up on the desperate need to understand that you can be, whether you call yourself a progressive liberal or a conservative liberal, you can have views that embrace and espouse more action on climate change to deal with those ways. And I've said publicly before too that, you know, I want my party to make it clear that everybody can have a place in the Liberal Party, even if you have a view that might not sit squarely with some people maybe from Queensland or whatever. We've got to be an all-embracing party. And if that happens, then I think the federal government will see that there's a great deal of support for addressing that concern in the community. Some of the, you know, I think the governor of California came out and was very scathing overnight. So I hear what you're saying.
So a score out of 10 for Morrison's leadership on bushfire response?
Can I answer that in two parts? The first thing, the optics are... No, because I think it's fair to say that you've got to look, in terms of the substance, I think it's fair to look at what happens in terms of aid relief and whether that goes. I even think the Prime Minister himself has possibly conceded, if not, I think he would privately, that some of those early steps were missteps, and I think he's worked as hard as he can, but it wasn't a great period, and I think he gets that.
So what's the second part?
Oh, no, the second part was you've got to look at the longer term work around getting relief to families and to firefighters and to communities. And I'll be fair on both sides. I think what Martin Pakula has done this week, I think it's this week and possibly the week before.
He's been doing a pub crawl up in Gippsland.
Well, yeah, and you could, I can see some of the jokes, but he'd be, that's hard work. I mean, going around from community to community, you know, non-stop is really tough work. So I give kudos to him and to the government for getting out there and being quite active in wanting to support local communities and businesses. So on both sides, I think people are registering how important that is.
It's like the Terps and Tucker trial, Tass. Have you been seeing the tweets? So every time, you know, Martin's somewhere eating or visiting, you know, he's sending pictures, which is great. And talking about, you know, not just restaurants but accommodation facilities and other things that are going on in regional Victoria and that people should be going to.
Yeah, and it's hard work. It looks easy and fun, but it's actually very hard work.
Yeah. Saturday Magazine Joy 94.9. Macca and Tass, our guest is John Pesutto. John's a former state MP. He's now a commentator on lots of things and also a business consultant. John, you've been a minister.
Not a shadow, but worked for ministers.
Yeah. And so you're familiar with the process around how often, you know, ministers sign off on grants of all kinds. Now, I'll acknowledge here, and I'm sure you'll agree, there's a degree of partisanship, and dare I say patronage, in how these grants are awarded. Everyone accepts that. I think what we've seen over the last little while, the sports grants that have Bridget McKenzie has signed off on and granted, outside the normal process, this is one of the things I'm quite disillusioned with. How have we got to this point where you have a body, Sports Australia, that recommends the grants? The minister doesn't look at that. She decides, well, this is where they're going to go. So ignores the advice of the people that you pay to vet the proposals and put them forward. And without going into actually individual grants, how do you feel about that? You know, you've been an observer. You've worked in ministers' offices. To me, it's just not right. It's not appropriate.
Yeah, I'm glad you've raised it. I'm ambivalent about it in this sense that I've seen how the system works, and I don't mean to be cynical, listeners, but it doesn't surprise me. This is the way our system for decades and decades has operated. And can I offer some comfort that maybe out of all of this, we might get some reform at all levels of government, federal, state and local? Because we can't have a situation, in my view, at a policy level where this sort of thing happens day in and day out, but it's accepted because it has happened for so many decades. It's not as easy as people think, because governments and oppositions, when they're campaigning, can make promises.
Of course.
And say, for example, if we're elected, we will deliver funding for this organisation, even if the bureaucratic assessment is not to fund that. That's a call that an opposition or a government can make.
Mm.
That to me is okay. I do think we need to look at broader reform of how programs, once you're in government, are allocated. There might be situations where, and I'm not saying that happened here, but there can be situations where you can legitimately have intervention at a ministerial or government level, but that needs to be submitted to sort of rigorous review. So what I'm hoping out of all of this is that there is some reform and that all levels of government deal with this. That doesn't take away from the fact that we've got now, I think a total of four investigations at the federal level. We've had the auditor, we've got the department, we've got the attorney general, and I think there may well be a Senate inquiry into all of this. So I don't know how all that's going to end up, but I do hope that out of this we get some reform, and in some kind of positive way, if it means that there's more attention in the future about this, then we can see that.
John, I've been on, you know, selection panels for grants programs all my life, really. Mm. I've been on thousands of them. Ordinarily, you have a set of criteria. You have a selection panel that assesses applications against those criteria and then puts forward a set of recommendations to the appropriate authority to fund them. And usually they're rubber stamped by government and there'll be an announcement and so forth. Now, I think of the Hay Grants program, which is only a small-scale program. Yeah. Some of the grants were $2,000 or $3,000. Some of them were about, you know, $15,000 or $20,000. Yeah. That was exactly the process that we used. The minister accepted the recommendation and ran public with those. Now, what we had here was complete interference. We had a case where Sports Australia conducted the assessment, made the recommendations, and they were completely and utterly ignored. That's not my words. They're words of the Auditor General. Yeah.
Mm.
Grant Hare conducted an independent review. Now, Grant Hare, if you know him, is a man of integrity. He used to work in the Victorian Public Service. That's where I first came across him. He doesn't mince his words. He's very straight down the line. And I suspect that what he told us was a very sanitised version of what's actually occurred.
Mm. I don't think he can describe his report as anything other than fairly scathing. It is. But I wouldn't disagree with what you said, Tess. What I'm trying to say is that whether it's a grants program, and it doesn't really matter in some ways whether it's $5,000 or $5 million, but this is what my concern is. This happens in different ways all over government. So, for example, you'd know, because I think you might have spent time in the state system, You look at budget paper number four, which for listeners, that's the budget paper every year at a state level, which outlines all the capital expenditure, roads, schools, hospitals. If you did an assessment, and I'm not going to name one side of politics over the other, but if you went back over time and did an assessment of that capital expenditure program, you would find it heavily skewed. And we're talking tens of millions of dollars. Now, again, I'm not trying to say that, you know, you only reach a problem when you're talking about big dollars. It doesn't matter, in a sense. But my argument is, out of all of this, the investigations into the McKenzie thing will take their course and they'll land where they may. Beyond that, I think we need a broader discussion about how do we look at all of this? Because this is happening on a large scale right across government.
So, all that aside, John, will Bridget McKenzie, Senator Bridget McKenzie, have a job on Tuesday morning? When we all go back to work after a long weekend.
Look, I know Bridget, so I don't want to speak ill of her prospects. I think it's a very challenging situation. Very challenging. I don't know, because it is going to depend on what Phil Gaetjens, who's the Secretary of Treasury, is going to come back with. I don't know if the Attorney-General's still looking at it. I don't know, but it's a tough set of circumstances to weather.
So you're glad you're a commentator and not a minister under threat?
Oh, no, I'd fall back into the arena any second, Macca.
This is an extraordinarily brutal and public process. I mean, no matter, you know, what you think about this situation, this must be a really difficult time for somebody like Senator McKenzie. She must be feeling horrible.
I imagine she would be. I haven't spoken to her about that, but I imagine she would be, and she would be feeling, I imagine, that if I'm going to bear the full brunt of this, where's everybody else in all of this?
I always think in these situations, you always have the element of surprise when you tell the truth. And I think in this whole matter, we're not seeing the truth, right? Did Bridget McKenzie make the decisions on her own? I don't know. Was there any input from other ministers? Was there any input from the National Party? You know, was there any input, you know, from the Libs, from the Prime Minister's office? We don't know. We need to understand why she made these decisions and on what basis. And that's only fair. After all, it's our money.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we trust ministers to do that. We've got a bit of a left field question for you now.
Sure.
Just from a listener. Now, Tass is looking at his listener. Can you ask John what he thinks of Meghan and Harry moving away from the monarchy? Is it time we became a republic?
Well, look, I am a Republican.
Yep.
So I say, you know, they've made a decision. They're a family. I wish them all the very best. I'm a Republican, but I'm going to use this occasion to you know... put my view on this. I want to see Australia become a republic, but I do think that the direct elect model, and I know this is going to rattle the cage with a lot of listeners, that will not see a republic happen, in my view.
No.
We have, for reasons I won't elaborate too much, but our system of government is set up so that when we talk about separation of powers, it's not quite the US or French model. Our monarch or the sovereign is a part of our parliament.
Yes.
And so we have a doctrine that has characterised our system of government of responsible government, in the sense that all members of the executive, from the sovereign down to ministers of the crown, are all somehow part of or members of the parliament. Now, if you're going to give a directly elected head of state a direct constituency, you are upending the whole system.
Yes,
I say to people, I want Australia to become a republic. My encouragement, little old me, is that let's all get behind a model that would require harmony and unity in the parliament, set the threshold for support, 75% or more. Yeah. And
of both houses.
Yeah, make it a really tough threshold. But I actually think it's a positive thing if you say, let's force the parliament to come together. And I'm confident that despite all of the acrimony you sometimes see in parliament...
We saw it in marriage equality.
Yeah, the parliament will come together on something like that. And so that's my message, is let's get behind
There are two issues then. One is, do we want to become a republic? And the second is, what's the best model?
What's the model?
Yeah. And I think also, and I've said
and
this...
And I think that's sometimes that confuses the very first question.
Yeah.
People start with that rather than, should we be a republic?
Yeah.
I think most people would argue, and this is only my view, that it's about time we were a republic. Mm. It's about time we had our own governance, we had our own head of state.
Yeah.
We're mature enough to do that.
And a head of state whose position is determined by, not directly necessarily, but through our parliamentary
collegiate system, in effect.
Now, I think, Macca, you've got another topic, haven't you?
Pre-selections, John. We sort of made a joke about it earlier. The state Liberal Party, and in particular Liberal State President Robert Clark, wants to have elections for state and federal seats early. The impact this would have is if you're a member of parliament, member of the opposition in Victoria, shadow minister, or you're a member of the, you know, federal member for the Liberal Party, and you're a minister or you're a backbencher, if you lost pre-selection for an election 3 years hence, you'd be a lame duck. And the argument is, by Josh Frydenberg, we shouldn't be doing this, you know, we should wait until closer to the election. Oh, it gives Labor a better chance to select candidates that, you know, perhaps might be better. Actually, you know, the issue is, should these pre-selections be held sooner or later? Because it has a lot of impact. It's going to have a lot of impact. What's your view?
My view is that I do support earlier pre-selections, but not this early.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I say that is you do want people out on the ground, building up their links in the community. But if you have pre-selections that are too early, too soon, I'm not so convinced by the lame duck argument, because I don't think you're justified if you lose pre-selection in turning on the party. But I recognise that some people do feel that way. My big problem if you have pre-selections that are so early in the cycle is it makes it very difficult for potential candidates to say, I have a job, I'm going to have to leave my job, particularly if it's a federal seat, I'm going to have to leave my job 2.5 years in advance of the federal election. Admittedly on a punt, all of these things are a punt, but I've got it's a Labor held seat or it's a Liberal held seat and I'm expected to campaign every day. How can I support myself or my partner or family or whatever? How can I do that for 2.5 years?
Perhaps you could get a grand.
Well, touché, Macca.
I got no comeback. That's an ace.
And look, I agree. Look, we've seen the situation where when candidates are selected on Labor and Liberal, close to the election, we've had some pretty disastrous candidates on both sides, particularly, you know, state and federal, right? You know, people, you go, how the hell did, you know, did they ever, and we spoke to Michael Kroger about this and he used the argument, well, Liberal Party don't have the resources and takes a lot of time to check social media. Well, it doesn't actually. But, so I'm not saying, okay, let's not do it 2 months before. Are you saying something like, say, 6 months before?
Or even 12.
Or, you know, or 12. I mean, I get it about what do you do if you're not currently involved in politics, you know, unless you're a staffer or something like that, how do you support yourself? I agree. But it also gives people the time to establish themselves in that electorate and, you know, to really understand the issues and to be able to enunciate policy that might, you know, might be attractive to the voters. So, I mean, there's another side of the coin there.
Yeah, and look, I don't mind this saying this on air, is that one of my concerns about my party, the Liberal Party, is that we have treated particularly the western part of Melbourne, western metropolitan, northern metropolitan, the lower house seats in particular, we've treated them like we'll never win them, so we'll pre-select our candidates very late. And what I'm urging my colleagues internally to do, and I'm not alone in this.
Bernie Finn's been there for a long time.
I mean, in terms of the administration of the party, is that we need to start treating these seats like we treat every other seat. Early candidates, because if we're telling the people of, say, Melton or Tarneit that, look, we're going to give you a candidate, but we'll give you a candidate 4 weeks before polling day, what else are they going to do but say, well, you don't really care about us. So we've got to start investing them, have earlier pre-selections there, and we've got to have a longer-term plan. And I know there's work being done on this, but we've let it slide for too many years, and we're paying the price. So when you ask about, well, we didn't vet these candidates, that's why, because we've treated these seats as on a lower order of priority, so we don't check them, we don't care, or we do care, but we don't care to have the pre-selections early enough, where we'll do that due diligence.
You know, the Conservatives in the UK put a lot of time and effort into selecting candidates in the north. And seats, okay, there were other reasons that they won some of those seats, but it was the quality of a lot of those candidates that helped them win those seats.
Absolutely.
Rather than just, we'll put some old, you know, Conservative, some old tart or some Labor hat, you know, whatever, up in those seats because we're not going to win it.
Yeah. Can I give you a couple of stats to show you how significant this problem is for my party? At the state level, right, we'll just talk about the lower house in the Victorian Parliament. There are 88 seats. Labor holds an astonishing 55 after that last election. Let me put this to you. 36 of Labor's seats are held with margins of 10% or more. And get this, I think it is 10 seats, if I'm not mistaken, 10 seats of those 36 are held with margins of 20% or more. It is an untenable position for my party. So what I've been saying, again, I'm not alone, but I'm certainly someone who's arguing we may not win the seat of, you know, Sydenham in the next election, but we've got to have an aspiration to try and win that seat in 10 years, or if not sooner. But to do that, we've got to invest significant time and resources and find good candidates early. And
you know, John, you've opened up a whole can of worms, and we could have a debate about this all morning.
We're going to go, but I just
but we're actually out of time.
We are, and I want to make a quick comment. I agree with you, and if, you know, if the Liberals want to win a number of seats, engaging with our community is really important, because some of those seats where the margin is enough for you to potentially win, unless you get half of the queer vote plus one in those seats, you're probably not going to win them. Mm-hmm. So engaging with our community, you know, which is what you're doing and Michael O'Brien did last year, and we're going to be doing it again this year, that's really important, because without that, you know, you won't.
Yeah, no, great.
John Pesutto?
Yeah, we're out of time, John. Thank you very much for coming in. Can I just say we've had a bit of feedback from one of our listeners, one of our fans, actually, 317, who says, refreshing to hear a sensible Liberal with modern and articulate views. So
there you go.
There's some feedback for
thank
you.
Thank you so much. 317.
Oh, and another
we
one.
Don't know their name. That's what we've called
said
them
there's
forever.
There's a very...
Macca, that was a as always, well... Not always. We've only had John on a couple of occasions, but he certainly is very refreshing, don't you think?
It's his fourth or fifth visit.
Has it been that many?
Yeah.
Right. Geez, I've lost count. It's terrible.
It's because he doesn't upset you that you actually, you don't know what, it's only the ones who upset us we remember.
I just think he's incredibly refreshing. And what a gentleman, let's be honest about it.
Authentic.
There we go.
Saturday Magazine is proudly sponsored by Velocity Rewards, the loyalty program of Virgin Australia.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.